Hello and welcome to the University of California Press Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Gondek. And today I'm speaking with Suzanne Barston about her new book, Bottled Up, How the Way We Feed Babies Has Come to Define Motherhood and Why It Shouldn't. Suzanne Barston has worked for the past decade as a writer and editor for health and parenting publications, including the editor-in-chief of Los Angeles Family Magazine. She runs the Fearless Formula Feeder blog. Suzanne Barston, thanks so much for being on the University of California Press Podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
This book draws from your own experiences as a new mother. What happened that made you begin to question breastfeeding?
Well, it wasn't so much that I questioned breastfeeding, which I actually think is a really wonderful thing, but that I started thinking that the conversation about infant feeding in our society is just fraught with some really complex problems. What happened was I had fully intended on breastfeeding my first child, my son Leo, and we faced a bunch of problems from the start. The first one being that he was never really able to latch correctly, despite the fact that we saw 7 different lactation consultants who were all, you know, very reputable and known to be able to fix any problem in Los Angeles. They could not seem to figure out what was going on with my son. So I ended up exclusively pumping my milk for him. But then it turned out that he had a severe intolerance to all dairy. And this was an important point because I had been practically vegan for most of my life and hadn't really been ingesting any dairy that I had known about while I was breastfeeding him or pumping for him. So they told me to do an elimination diet and cut out all dairy from my diet, which obviously was not a very big deal for me as a vegan, but I wasn't noticing any difference. So at that point, they had me try a hypoallergenic formula, and within 12 hours, I had a totally new baby. He was sleeping. He stopped crying. He didn't have rashes all over his body. He had, you know, a myriad of gastrointestinal issues that cleared up within a day. So at that point, you know, I really started wondering what else there was about breastfeeding that, you know, I had been told that wasn't necessarily true. I had always been told that there was no way that a baby could be intolerant of its mother's milk. It had to be something within her diet. And, you know, here I was, somebody who had done the elimination diet and cut out everything, and yet my child was suffering. And it turned out, when I started doing my own research, that there are cases of human infants being intolerant or clinically allergic to human milk. And, you know, there are very few studies that have actually examined this, but the ones that are there do show that this is absolutely possible. So yet when you look at, you know, the research that the public sees, none of this is ever mentioned, and the party line is it's impossible for a human to be allergic to human milk. So when I realized that this one myth was obviously not true, it really made me start wondering what else was being told to us that was not necessarily 100% fact. And once I started down that rabbit hole, I realized that there's a remarkable amount of bias, misunderstanding, assumption, and frankly, a lot of paternalism in the infant feeding discourse.
So while I was reading this book, I was thinking, you know, I'm a child of the 70s, and I remember back then, but I mean, obviously when I was being fed, but when I was younger, you know, bottle feeding wasn't that big deal. As far as I know, I was bottle fed, and breastfeeding was tend to be more the exception than the norm. So what changed from that time to today that's made breastfeeding kind of the new normal when it comes to motherhood?
Well, funnily enough, actually, I would say bottle feeding is still the norm in many parts of our country and even abroad. But what's changed is the rhetoric surrounding breastfeeding, right? So the overall atmosphere of parenting, I think we've sort of turned it into a science. And so everything that we do is kind of under a microscope. And, you know, what I think did change historically was that back in the 70s, and I'm a child of the 70s as well, I was obviously bottle fed. And it was not a big deal. You're absolutely right back then. But then this thing happened with Nestle, which was really terrible. They went in to third world countries and had women disguised as nurses, distributing infant formula and convincing these women that their breast milk was no good and that formula was the better choice. Then they disappeared, the free samples disappeared, and these women in tribal societies who had always relied on breastfeeding were now left with a horrible, dangerous water source of, you know, unclean water, no resources to sterilize bottles, and a lack of formula. So they were watering down formula with water that was contaminated. And as you can imagine, really horrible things happened and thousands of babies died. Because of this, it sort of became an international scandal, and attention was now put on infant feeding internationally, and people started really looking into this not only as a moral issue about what the formula companies did in terms of unethical marketing, but also scientifically. I think a lot of scientists started really caring about proving that breastfeeding was better than formula feeding to sort of shove it in Nestle's face for good reason. So we saw a bunch of studies come out in the early 80s showing that breastfed babies had better outcomes than formula-fed babies. There was also this element that the women's health movement was going on then, and it was attempting to reaffirm women's confidence in their own bodies. And infant formula was something that had been pushed by this very patriarchal medical society where, the pediatricians had basically convinced women, even in this country, that formula was the better option. But what's ironic is that as breastfeeding advocacy has grown, it's now relying on that same system to promote breastfeeding. And I think we've sort of caused a different kind of mistrust for our bodies as women's bodies, and also just where we don't trust women to make sound decisions. So I don't think, if you look at breastfeeding rates, we really haven't gotten that far from the 70s. I mean, our initiation rates have gone up, but our long-term breastfeeding rates really haven't. The vast majority of us are still using formula at some point within our baby's first year. However, there's a lot more pressure to breastfeed. And, I think there's a real disconnect there about if women are expected now to breastfeed, but yet they're not meeting these goals, what's happening in between the expectation and the reality to make it so difficult for us?
Is there a class element into this breastfeeding rhetoric? Are people kind of ignoring the fact that in some instances it's easier for women that are higher in the socioeconomic status to breastfeed as it is, say, a woman who's working at Walmart or a woman who's working two jobs?
Absolutely. That is a huge issue and one really the bulk of what I deal with in the book. If you look at the breastfeeding research, there is no doubt that the body of research shows that, formula feeding does not have as positive outcomes as breastfeeding. However, it's impossible to untangle, what the actual benefits are versus just being associated. The women that are breastfeeding, they also have associations with a lot of other great, health-inducing lifestyle choices. So, for instance, the women who are most likely to breastfeed in our country tend to be highly educated, either college or beyond, upper middle class. And those same women are, they're getting access to a lot of, better health care, better food, better education. So there's, the IQ question comes up a lot with breastfeeding, whether it raises IQ. Well, the mothers who are breastfeeding are, for the most part, better educated, and there's, they actually don't factor in maternal IQ to many of these studies, which is kind of ridiculous because that actually is the biggest indicator of your own IQ is your mother's IQ. But, I think we can sort of make an assumption that a lot of the women who are breastfeeding also have higher IQs just by association. And it is. I mean, there's so many factors that play into any of these outcomes we're talking about, whether it be infection or obesity or intelligence or social development. All of these things, if you have resources, you're going to be better off. So the same women who are having trouble breastfeeding for either physical or situational reasons, they may also be having other issues that affect their parenting. So if somebody, for instance, is severely depressed and has a tough time because they can't breastfeed because they're on certain medications, well, depressed parents, oftentimes there's other issues that come up, throughout childhood in terms of forming secure connections and things like that do factor into social development. There's also the fact that, if you are breastfeeding exclusively, most likely you're not, and breastfeeding exclusively, I'm saying no pumping, you're probably either someone who is not working or has a private nanny who can come bring your child to you in order to breastfeed. So your kid's not in daycare. Well, daycare kids are sicker. That's been, shown across hundreds of studies. And for obvious reasons, they're around other germy little kids. So, you know, if we're going to look at overall population, you know, breastfed versus formula fed, well, you're more likely to have some formula in your diet if your if your parents are working full time and they can't afford a private nanny. That's, you know, just what our research has told us. So, therefore, if you're in daycare and you're subjected to germs, you're going to get sick more often. So then the study is going to say, okay, formula-fed kids are sicker than breastfed kids, but really what that study might be saying is that kids who are in daycare are sicker than kids who are not in daycare. And we're not being clear about what the research actually says. You know, there's this very kind of white man's burden thing, I think, about it, where we feel like, well, if we can just educate women more, you know, they just don't know any better. And that's not really the case. It's just we're not looking at the realities that these women are living, and that, you know, if they are single parents who have no help, no car sometimes, so no access to be able to go to the free breastfeeding clinic, you know, which is two towns away, they maybe don't have access to the best pediatrician in town who's super pro breastfeeding and has lactation consultants on staff. These are all things that, you know, do factor into a woman's ability to breastfeed, and then long term, their ability to give their kids all these other things that are, you know, conducive to good health.
Is it fair to say that your book also argues that in some ways certain elements of the feminist movement have picked the easier fight over breastfeeding rights, as opposed to what you kind of alluded to that in the answer, that that it's easier to fight for breastfeeding in the workplace than it is to fight for extended parental leave, and therefore more energy is focused on that issue in, I want to say, natal care as opposed to the extended leave?
Yeah, I mean, I think it gets complicated because fighting for extended leave, you know, that opens a whole can of worms, obviously, about who's going to pay for it. But I think in terms of feminism and what we've chosen as feminists to focus on, it's a very warped conversation within, I think, feminism. I mean, first of all, you have to decide which form of feminism you're talking about, because radical feminists believe one thing and liberal feminists believe another. And when it comes to breastfeeding, a lot of these issues really start kind of rearing their ugly heads. But I think what we can all agree on, you know, across feminist lines, if you will, is that women do have the right to pump well at their workplace, and that we do need to be better at becoming more inclusive for parents within the workplace. The problem is that we end up arguing for pumping rights, and we use the same rhetoric that is being used everywhere that really causes, I think, an improper understanding of what breastfeeding can do. So, for instance, in order to get the more recent breastfeeding or pumping laws passed, people were using arguments that this is going to lead to workers losing less time. So employers are going to lose, are going to end up, you know, benefiting because their employees will not have to miss work because of sick kids. Well, you know, I talk about this in the book, but there was a study recently done where they actually looked at this. There's actually been two studies. One was in Canada, and they found that all this rhetoric being used, when they actually looked at companies that had used very progressive pumping policies, there was no correlation with better outcomes in terms of the health of the employees' children, or overall like employee retention or missing days and things like that. So it doesn't really seem to be working. There have been other studies in America. I think the Kaiser organization here did something to that effect, and it did show some benefit. However, you know, there's also, you have to factor in the fact that everybody who's pumping is taking 15 minutes out of their day, I think three or four times a day. That adds up over time to missed work as well. So whenever we start trying to fight for, you know, rights for parents or women based on the bottom line, I think we get into really tricky territory, and we start relying on, you know, bad economics and bad science, which, you know, unfortunately really runs rampant in this particular debate. But I think if we could fight for parental leave, both for, you know, fathers and for mothers, that would go a lot farther in promoting sort of a gender-neutral parenting, and ensuring that parents had the ability to care for their infants in the best way that they saw fit. So if that's breastfeeding, then obviously having a longer maternity leave is going to help facilitate breastfeeding. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to argue that point. But even if you choose not to breastfeed, you know, having longer time with your infant is going to help you bond and help you be happier when you go back to work and all these other things. So, you know, I'm curious why we haven't pushed for more studies that examine the benefit of longer parental leave just as a construct in itself, instead of focusing so heavily on the breastfeeding part of it, which is so polarizing. And it does, you know, unfortunately, it does essentialize women down to biological functions. So as feminists, I think it's puzzling that we haven't argued for some of these things just based on parenting rights and, you know, what's best for society in general, instead of, you know, really grasping onto this breastfeeding thing, which does veer off into some very uncomfortable territory.
Suzanne Barston, the author of Bottled Up, How the Way We Feed Babies Has Come to Define Motherhood and Why It Shouldn't. Thanks so much for being on the University of California Press podcast today.
Thanks so much.
For more information about this and other titles, please visit our website at www.ucpress.edu. Don't forget, you can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/UCPress. And you can also follow us on Twitter, where we are at UC Press. Thanks for listening to this episode of the University of California Press podcast. Copyright 2012, the University of California Press. All rights reserved.